everyone. Welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Maish Seibel, and I'm the founder of drseibel.com, drseibel.com, and the editor of My Menopause Magazine. You know, one of the things that nobody ever wants to hear is the word cancer. It's probably one of the most scary words in the entire English language. And the thing about it is that many times when people have a diagnosis like cancer, justifiably and understandably, their first hope, their first wish, their first prayers and desires is let me live. But you know, fortunately today, with advances in medicine and technology and so many other things, those wishes are being met with more and more frequency. So let me live is turning into let me survive. And survival is what we're going to talk about today. And in particular, we're going to talk about survival in terms of a sexual reality, in terms of being able to retain the intimacy that one experienced before the diagnosis. And we're going to be talking about women's health and the diagnosis of cancer and how it affects and impacts on sexuality. And I'm very delighted to have with me today Ellen Chernow. Dr. Chernow is an assistant professor at the University of Massachusetts. She is the health psychologist in the Cancer Center at the University of Massachusetts Medical School in Worcester, Massachusetts. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
You know, it's a big job dealing with the mental health of women as they get through these kinds of diagnoses. Maybe we could just start briefly, and you can just talk a little bit about what you do. I mean, cancer per se has got a lot of issues besides sexual function, which is our focus, but maybe you could just talk about what's normal and just share that a little bit.
Sure. Well, when anyone hears a diagnosis of cancer, as you just said, it's a shocking experience. The word cancer still has the same psychological punch that it has had for years, for decades. You're right, though, in saying that the types of treatment have come a long way. So the focus usually isn't will I live, but how will I survive. Mm-hmm. But women in particular go through a number of different stages in general, and people in general, and that is when they first hear that diagnosis, they're in shock, they become fearful, they can become anxious or depressed, all normal reactions to hearing that word. Once the treatment plan is in place, then the patient is really focused in general on getting through the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
What I find, though, however, is that most women experience difficulty after the treatment is completed, because now they're no longer focusing on the treatment. A lot of the social support that they were getting kind of goes away because people think that they're all better now. And they're also expected to return to their roles that they were in prior to their diagnosis.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I find, you know, is that when women are dealing with cancer, really when anyone is dealing with it, but when the women are in the thick of it, they're dealing with it, you know, people are calling and how's your treatment and what's going on? Are you having these side effects? What's happening?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
All this attention. And then they are done with their treatment phase, and now they, of course, will always continue to be followed up and seen and so forth, but from a more and more distant interaction. And now suddenly they're left with all that support and caring and so forth. It didn't disappear, but it certainly went from the foreground to the background. And there they are, and they're supposed to be grateful they're alive, and now they got to deal with their realities.
That's exactly right. And also the desire from the people around them, because they love them, that they will go back to their previous role as being mother, wife, worker.
Lover.
Lover, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's clearly a major transition. And maybe you could talk a little bit about when a person is now in the phase of having survived and she notices that her body's different, and of course it's going to matter greatly if it's an issue of breast cancer or vulvar cancer, the cancer on the skin of the vaginal area, or an internal cancer of her ovaries or her uterus. All these may have some special particular things, but in general, how do you get started broaching this subject with women? How do you talk about it, or what do the women come to you with?
Well, most of the women do not come in with the sexual issue as the major issue. It's mm-hmm. usually the other issues that I described. But as part of my assessment process, I do ask them about their sexual desire, the libido, mm-hmm. their relationships with their significant other, and then that issue is discussed. So I've only had one patient in all these years come in with the sexual issue as the presenting problem. There are usually other issues going on in addition to that.
They probably feel, I'm speaking for someone whom I don't know, but I think that in my own personal experience in dealing with women with these issues, as I mentioned earlier, I think there's a feeling that they don't have the right to ask about that stuff. There's so many other issues and, you know, they're surviving and why should they have, you know, be talking about orgasms when they should be grateful they're alive? And why should they be talking about vaginal dryness and so forth when they have these other things? And, you know, the permission giving is a great important thing, you know, to say, do you have any other issues, or,
right,
you know, are there, how are things with your intimacy, or how's your sexual relationship going with your partner? I mean, I'm sure those kinds of questions are things that you broach at some point.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And given the permission to discuss it and their level of ease with which to talk about it, it is something we try to discuss because it is important.
And when they get their information, you know, they say afterwards, you know, the side effects, you know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of the side effect things we talk about now are things that, I hate to put it this way, but things you can get sued for. You know, you can have a risk of infection. You can have a risk mm-hmm. of a blood clot. You can have a risk of having to have further surgery. You know, we may not get all the disease and so forth, but where does the discussion begin? When can a woman begin to think that it might be mentioned? And when might a healthcare provider, a mental health care provider, raise this? What's the window of time between the treatment, you know, and the kind of touching this subject?
Right. Well, there really is no window of time in terms of someone mentioning it or talking to their health provider about it. But unfortunately, a lot of women and a lot of medical providers feel uncomfortable at times talking about this issue with women, and that's why it is so important that there is someone available to talk about sex and the issues around the sexual issues that are happening in that person's relationship.
I think you hit a very important nail on the head, which is that there is a certain lack of or discomfort, a lack of comfort or a discomfort with talking about it among many healthcare professionals. And of course, mm-hmm. there's also the issue of time, because, you know, there's always all these other people outside, and there's all these, quote, more important things.
That's
but,
exactly right.
You know, and so, but to that person, it may not be that there are more important things at this moment, because the relationship that she is in with her partner and how that makes her feel about mm-hmm. herself may have a major impact on then how she feels that she can interact with her children, if she has children, or her parents, or her friends, or, you know, the world around her. Because if she feels less value or less pretty or less whole or less anything, that can have a very big impact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Unfortunately, as just said, though, most women feel uncomfortable speaking about this issue, and so it really can impact deeply into their self-esteem and just general way that they interact with everybody in their life.
Right. And I guess the women that you see must range in age from rather younger to rather older.
Absolutely. We have a huge age range. As you know, though, the risk for cancer increases as you age. So the majority of women that I do see are over 50, but we certainly have a number of women who are younger than that. And unfortunately, those are the women who have the most difficult issues with sexual feeling and having their sexual needs discussed and met because of their sense of being young. And if the cancer treatment does impact their ovaries or radiation or any of the kind of surgery, any kind of treatment impacts their hormone levels and can greatly reduce their sexual drive and therefore really lose their sense of desire for sex.
Mm-hmm. Because just to clarify, I mean, if we're talking today a lot about, we're talking about cancer in general, but if we talk about the cancer of the female genital tract or the female anatomy, I mean, the cancer ends up having a major effect in several different ways because on the one hand, the cancer itself may, the treatment, the surgical treatment can cause the removal of the ovaries, which are hormone producing. And then, of course, there may be the removal of the uterus, which causes the periods. So right away, you go from if you're before menopause, you're going to go into menopause as
Correct.
A result of removing the ovaries. And that's an mm-hmm. abrupt change. It's not something that happens, you know, over a 10-year window. It's something that happens over a 10-hour window. You go in before menopause and you finish the surgery after menopause. But in other situations, there could be the radiation that you talked about, mm-hmm. and the radiation can then change the tissue and cause the ovaries to stop producing hormones, but it can also dry the tissues of the vaginal area and the lips of the vagina and the area around, which can cause intercourse to be painful. And
right.
that, of course, is another issue.
Right. And the third issue is if they have any kind of chemotherapy that impacts their ovaries
mm-hmm.
and also puts them into menopause, which is very common.
So the chemotherapy is very toxic to the cancer, but it's also toxic to normal ovary tissue.
Correct.
Which, because I know that most women, when they think of chemotherapy, I think the thing they think about most is they think about the hair falling out.
And right.
And, of course, that has to do with attractiveness at the moment, or at least a perceived attractiveness. But the ovaries are also, the egg cells are dividing also, and that's why they are so sensitive to that chemotherapy, which causes them sometimes to be lost. Now, do you find that sex and sexual issues are different in women who have already had children versus women who have not?
That's a difficult question to answer. I would say, though, that the majority of women who are over 50 and are in a stable relationship, I would say almost all of them have had children already. Mm-hmm. Younger women, particularly in our culture where women are getting married later and having children later and later, it's not always the case that someone has had children. And so if they are diagnosed with cancer and have one of these treatments that does cause a reduction in their hormone levels and in their arousal or desire for sex,
mm-hmm.
It can be a definite problem.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. Years ago, when I was in my training, I was in the GYN cancer clinic, and
mm-hmm.
I had a woman come in who was about 80 years old, and she came in, and I was just following her post-op. She'd had radiation for cervical cancer of the neck of the cervix, or the neck of the mm-hmm. womb, as it's called,
mm-hmm.
and I looked inside to do her exam, and when I looked into her vaginal area, I saw a metal clip there. It was a piece of metal that was put on as a marker, because many times when they put radiation into the body, they will put a little metal clip or like a staple next to it, because they want to be able to take an x-ray of the placement of that radiation and see as a reference point if it's into the point they wanted or it slipped out and things like that.
Right.
So I looked in there and I said, did this, does that clip hurt your partner? And she said, you know, my partner left after the diagnosis because he was afraid he would catch cancer.
Oh, no.
And, you know, and it's kind of ironic in a way because, you know, men can actually give HPV or human papillomavirus to women, which can actually cause cancer. But that the women are not going to, you know, the post-radiation woman is not going to give cancer to the male. But in any event, so I said, are you sexually active now? And she looked at me kind of demurely, you know, and she kind of turned her head and blushed, and she said, you know, doctor, I'm not going to give up my afternoon bath. And
it's a great story.
The point of the story really is that women continue to be sexually desirous and active for all of their lives, and but there's a lot of misconceptions. And I ended up doing a number of studies on women who had I did questionnaires on hundreds of women who had had either surgery or radiation for their cancer of the cervix. I was specifically looking at one thing. And it turned out that the radiation was much more of an impact because it causes narrowing of the tissues and
scarring. Pain, I would assume.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. And pain, I would assume.
Yes, it could cause pain. But one of the good things, if there is a good thing, is that the cervix cancer is not affected by, and ovarian cancer is not affected by hormones, you know. So women can continue to get hormones if they want to have them, and not increase the risk. And, of course, this is a difference between many of the reproductive tissue hormone cancers and those of the breast, where often in most of the time, women with breast cancer, not all the time, there are exceptions, but most of the time, women who have breast cancer aren't able to take estrogen to help them with their symptoms.
That's right. That's exactly right, because they use this hormone treatment to block any more estrogen so that it's not feeding any more tumor cells if they are around.
Exactly. We are talking now with Ellen Chernow, and she is an assistant professor at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, and she is the health psychologist at the Cancer Center at the University of Massachusetts. And I'm your host, Dr. Maish Seibel. And you're listening to Your Health Rocks. And you can be found along with other podcasts and other kinds of interviews on a variety of topics at drseibel.com. I'm going to stop now for a minute. I want to play a song for you that I wrote for the American Cancer Society a few years ago. And it's called I Will Survive. It's a song not about sex and cancer, but it's a song about surviving cancer, because that's the number one thing on everyone's mind, both the person with the problem and the family and loved ones around them. So we'll play this song, and you'll hear my singing of it, and I'm with my daughter, Sherry, who's the female vocalist, and we'll be back in just a moment.
I was frightened, it was hell, but I'm a survivor and I plan to be well. I'm a fighter, God knows for sure, and I'll keep fighting, I'll keep surviving and working for a cure. Live in the moment, enjoy each day, keep a sense of humor, make time to pray, love and be loved by those who are dear. let the whole world know. One thing is clear, I keep hope alive, I will survive. I keep hope alive, I will survive. I was treated and I prayed and I visualized cancer gone away. I'm a fighter, God knows for sure, and I'll keep fighting, I'll keep surviving and working for a cure. Live in the moment, enjoy each day, keep a sense of humor. Make time to pray, love and be loved by those who are dear. Let the whole world know, one thing is clear, I keep hope alive, I will survive. I keep hope alive, I will survive. I keep hope alive, I will survive.
I hope you enjoyed that song, and I want to now turn back to our topic. And one of the things that can be a major factor for women as they get through their treatment, while they're in their treatment and beyond, is how it affects them generally. And maybe I could ask you to speak to that.
Absolutely. Research has shown that one-third of all cancer survivors experience fatigue as a long-term effect. Mm-hmm. It can also be due to, besides the chemotherapy treatment, it could be due to anemia, low thyroid, reduced muscle strength, depression, pain. These are all factors. And unfortunately, when a woman is feeling fatigued, it can be a very debilitating part of her life.
Of course, she's going to be tired from, tired from the treatment, tired from the consequences of the treatment, tired from mm-hmm. dealing with life and all of the negative, you know, the things that she has to continually be uplifting herself for and uplifting the people around her because...
That's right. But fatigue actually is more than just being tired.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer patients talk about that sleep or resting does not help it. It's almost a crushing kind of lack of energy that can be very, very debilitating.
So
but there
person...
are things that one can do to help that.
Well, tell us about that.
Okay. Well, exercise, I think, is the main avenue to help with fatigue. Now, I know it sounds kind of backwards. Why would somebody who has no energy be exercising?
Mm-hmm.
But study after study has shown how exercise really can increase energy. Also, having a good diet, eating well, keeping and maintaining a good weight, making sure that you're hydrated, these are all helpful aspects of helping with fatigue. Now, if the fatigue is also due to an underlying depression or anxiety, which is very, very common, sometimes seeing a psychologist or a therapist, even considering antidepression or anti-anxiety medication can also be helpful.
Well, when does one know that in the course of treatment, I mean, how do you integrate someone from the mental health side of this? Some places that you go will have someone, and fortunately, the University of Massachusetts, they have you. But mm-hmm. in other places, they don't have someone specifically, or they're there, but they're not connected directly, and you've got to go find those people. So when should a person be looking for the kind of support that they need, and you know, for their sexual health, but also for their mental health in general?
Well, I think it really depends on the person, and if they identify that these symptoms are really problematic and in impacting their day-to-day life. They do tell women that they will continue to feel some fatigue a few months after treatment for chemotherapy and radiation in particular, but many women continue to feel fatigue or tiredness up to a year or more. It's not uncommon. But it's really up to the woman to come in and decide. In terms of accessing that information, the American Cancer Society has a wonderful website providing resources for women who are looking for help. Talking to your primary care doctor can also be a conduit to getting some help with these issues.
So the thing is that tiredness, fatigue, it's not just tiredness, it's fatigue. It's that I just can't pick up one foot and put in front of the other. That's fatigue.
Correct.
And so if you have a situation where you are feeling really fatigued, and of course that's going to affect one's desire to have sexual relations with her partner, because let's face it, if you're too tired to, you just feel like the weight of the world is on you. You just so fatigued. It's not conducive to having to intimacy.
Correct.
Well, let me ask you this: where does the partner come in all of this when it comes to the sexual side of things? Where do we bring in the partner to kind of get involved? Because one of the things I found in my own research years ago when I was active in this area was that one of the most determining things in a woman's return to sexuality and her being happy with herself in that regard was really the support of her partner and the acceptance of her partner. And a lot of that gets framed before the treatment and so forth. And of course it goes on afterwards. So how do you deal with the woman's partner in making this a couple situation and not just her problem?
Well, we certainly try to bring the partner in if possible, and have them be part of the treatment, because a lot of the treatment techniques require that the partner be there and be part of some of the exercises and communication styles that can be learned and helpful if the couple is really having a difficult time. But you're right that the more supportive and understanding and the better communication a woman has with her partner, the easier the transition is, and also the easier the impact is on the relationship. We talk a lot about relationships as bank accounts. All the positive experiences is a deposit. All the negative experiences are a withdrawal.
Uh-huh.
And patients who have good deposits for both tend to be able to withstand the withdrawal as they go through the cancer treatment.
Would you find that the majority of the women, if they're able to interact and share information and work with their partners, are able to resume an acceptable or a good sexual life together?
I would say so. I think that, but a woman has to be in a place where she can focus on that. And sometimes it can take some time before she really is ready to work on that issue. Oftentimes I find that the husband is ready or much sooner than the woman is to deal with that issue.
It's like after a baby, when you have...
Right.
After a baby, there's going to be that window of time before the baby's born when sex kind of stops happening. And then there's that window of time after the baby is born when sex doesn't start up again.
Right.
And so this sometimes causes a little tension about when are you going to be ready.
Correct.
And while this is a very, very different circumstance, it has an element of similarity because, there's the diagnosis when people are so scared that they're not really thinking about sex. They're thinking, as I said in the beginning, about surviving. And then later afterwards, in the midst of treatment, may not be the time. And a matter of fact, that part of the body may be getting treatment, so it's not going to be a time for intimacy. And then afterwards, you talked about the extreme fatigue, but also, the fact that this may just not quite ready. But I guess this is where the communication comes in and where the person has to just continue to be reassured that it has to be allowed to have some time, to give it time to resume and to for the new reality to assume its place of normalcy.
Correct. We talk about a new normal, and that takes time. I find in general that most significant others of women who go through this are very supportive, and have a lot of patience as they go through this treatment with their partners.
Well, that's good to hear, because I'm sure that in some place in the back burner of women's minds, they're worrying about how they're going to be accepted and, you know, how they'll be different. And I would say that if there's a good relationship going in, there's going to be a good relationship coming out. And if there's a bad relationship going in, then probably this doesn't help it.
That's right. Exactly right. Because the stress is increased tremendously by the cancer diagnosis and treatment.
Yes, I can imagine that it would be, and it's understandable.
Absolutely. Yes. I would say that most men, because I do see men when I meet with a woman for a first time in some of the cancer centers, that I'm able to assess how they're coping with it. And I would say 99% of the men are extremely supportive and caring of their wives.
Now, in the event a woman is going to be going through this kind of an experience, or it's in her recent past, are there tips that you can offer to women to help them anticipate or to overcome some of the most common types of sexual difficulties? Because you talked about fatigue, and then, of course, there's going to be the potential in some people's cases for vaginal dryness and could be painful intercourse, maybe not. It just depends. Mm-hmm. But maybe I could ask you how you advise people.
Well, we try to let them know or give them some reading material so that they are aware of what some of the negative side effects can be. In addition to the ones you've mentioned, there can be negative body image. A lot of women experience hot flashes. Because if they're thrown into menopause, mood swings, sleeplessness, stress, these are all things that can happen as a result of going through treatment. So again, we try to educate, but we also tell them ways that they can deal with any of these side effects, like using vaginal moisturizers or lubricators, depending on the kind of cancer it is, to take some replacement estrogen. There's vitamin E.
And, of course, estrogen can be given locally, and sometimes even in situations where estrogen is not going to be something they take by mouth and for their whole body, they might be able to take a local estrogen and get some relief that way.
That's right. That's exactly right. Right. They won't take it orally, so it's systemic. They'll take it just locally in the area where it will be most helpful. And then there's antidepressants, anti-anxiety. Also, too, though, a lot of women find it very helpful to have someone else to talk to about this, either coming into counseling or support groups. There's a lot of information out there to read about it. And so there are a lot of supports out there. The woman just has to find the information, but I think it's out there. I think what happens, though, unfortunately, is that the sexual issue is on the back burner, as you said. Mm-hmm. And so even though we may have given them a whole list of what the side effects are, that's really one of the bottom issues for them. So if those issues do come or do arise, then they don't remember necessarily what we told them or the information, which is very, very normal because they're so focused. Initially, they're so focused on their treatment, getting through it. So it's important that they have that information with them. And so we often give them these materials so that if they need to, they can refer back to the book.
So one of the things, I guess, that a person could take away is that, hey, sexual intimacy and the act of intercourse and other ways of expressing closeness may be affected, but there are a lot of things that one can do. And the thing is to be aware that it may not be the person's primary focus in dealing with a cancer, but it is a totally permissible thing to talk about. And when you are ready, then it should be brought up, or there should be an ongoing dialogue that keeps that on the plate, so to speak, so that when the time comes, it can be addressed and dealt with.
You're absolutely right. We want them to feel comfortable to be able to talk about this issue at any point during their treatment or after, with no timeline.
Mm-hmm. Because there are many ways of being close. I mean, people can cuddle, and that can be a very warm and loving feeling of intimacy, which can be done at any point in time, which reassures and reaffirms the closeness of the couple without having intercourse, for instance, as part of the experience. But there's a lot that people can do to express this and their affections for each other, and also the things that they do and say to each other, how they're dealing with it. All of these things can be done. And are there support groups that are out there in general? I mean, women, and I think everybody, but now today, I think women are finding that talking to other women with this experience is very helpful, because you don't. The most reassuring way to realize that you're not the only one that's thinking this is to have 10 more women in the room, and they're saying, yeah, I got the same exact thing, you know.
That's right.
I'm thinking the same thing, you know, and that permission giving can be very helpful.
Oh, it is one of the strongest pieces that I see for women around any issue that they're feeling after cancer treatment, is to know that they're not alone.
Uh-huh.
It's just a huge impact in terms of knowing that there are others, and that they're not the only person on the planet who's experienced this, and that what they're experiencing is very normal, very important.
Yeah, I agree. I think that people do need that, and especially in sensitive topics where, and I think in the cancer survival arena in particular, as I mentioned earlier, when people want to feel grateful for surviving, and when they're thinking about sex and resuming a sexual activity, or they're upset because sex isn't the way it felt before, then they sometimes feel guilty about that. And a lot of it, too, is that even if a woman were sexually active and just became inactive, even without treatment or anything, there could be some discomfort resuming intercourse just because it hasn't been done in a while. And sometimes resuming intercourse, I mean, I'm not saying if it hurts, continue at it, but sometimes once one does resume, things get more comfortable just because the body adjusts to it again.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true.
Well, we have been talking with Ellen Chernow, who's an assistant professor at the University of Massachusetts and the health psychologist in the Cancer Center at UMass. And before we do close, I want to ask if there's any other words of wisdom, advice, or information you might want to share with women who have dealt with cancer and who are survivors and who are looking to optimize their mental health and their sexual health.
I think the biggest piece of advice that I could do is talk to someone. Give yourself permission to talk about these issues. Doctors do not make judgments. They really would like you to bring up these issues, and if they don't feel comfortable discussing it, they will certainly refer you or send you to information or a person who can provide some help. So it doesn't have to stay a secret. Ask and discuss what's happening.
Good advice.
Most important.
One final thing I have as a thought, and that is, if a woman has a mental health problem going into a situation like this, something like depression, or she has a bipolar disorder or any of a number of mental health issues, when she goes in, how will she reconcile this? Should she be working with someone in addition to her normal mental health person? Or could you just offer a little bit of insight into that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the women who are seeing a therapist or psychiatrist or both, seeing someone for their mental health issue, continue to do so. And that we very strongly encourage them because they do need the extra support. You know, having a cancer diagnosis is very frightening to someone who doesn't have depression or anxiety, but someone who already has a pre-existing condition, this news can increase those problems, particularly with, you see, depression, anxiety, any kind of stress-related issue. You know, some women have had sexual trauma histories,
right.
And this can be particularly difficult for them, particularly if the cancer is in the pelvic region. So,
you mean they relate it to that? They think there's a cause and effect, or it just draws attention to that part of their body that was traumatized before?
I think it just draws attention to that part of the body, and then the memories may return. It's like it almost opens the door back open for the trauma.
It's another violation in essence.
Correct. Absolutely. So I think in general, you know, women who already have some depression, anxiety, bipolar, whatever, I think are at a little higher risk for their psychological issue to get worse because of the stress of going through this. But what we always do is if a woman does not have support that way, they can come and see me, for example. We give them referrals to other outside psychologists, psychiatrists. We don't want to leave them alone, particularly if they already have that diagnosis. We really try hard to make sure that they are seeing someone.
So continue to see your usual mental health provider, but there may be things that someone who is particularly versed in the area of cancer treatment and familiar with some of that might add additionally. So there might be a time when you would want to bring in another person such as yourself who could be helpful to for these particular kinds of things, the fatigue you talked about, the self-esteem, some of the things that are working in around the issue of the cancer itself.
Right. Oftentimes women who are seeing another psychologist will also come and see me just for the cancer piece and how that's impacting them. That's not unusual.
Mm-hmm. So again, people need permission to realize that these are special times, and special times need special help and support. And there are people out there, such as Dr. Chernow, who can help you, and take advantage of them because it will make the outcome so much better, and the difficulty, it will lower the steepness of the recovery in terms of overcoming the challenges that one faces. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with me today and talking about women and cancer and in particular with a focus on the sexual impact that cancer has. And I think we've learned a lot about the fact that it has an impact. It can be there for a while. Working with the partner is a huge help. But with time, with work, with effort, and getting the proper attention and the proper treatment, one should be optimistic that when the woman is ready, that the opportunity exists to get things back to a satisfactory level and make herself feel whole again.
Correct.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And this is Dr. Seibel saying thank you to Dr. Chernow, and thank all of you. And remember, better to stay well than to get well.